We record this episode of Poll Hub on January 6th, the one-year anniversary of the riot, or the insurrection, or the legitimate political protest at the U.S. Capitol. Why describe this in such widely different terms? Well, our new poll sheds a lot of light on where America is 1 year after one of the most significant assaults on our democracy ever. Then, as Twitter gets set to celebrate its sweet 16 birthday, yahoo! We're looking at a fascinating new study by our friends at Pew that not only polled Americans about this social media platform, but also looked at actual Twitter feeds from some of the super users. Cool stuff. Finally, just in time for, winter laps in an indoor pool, our fun fact looks way back in time to see how much importance Americans put on knowing how to swim. I don't know about you, but we're about to get a bunch of snow. I'm really thinking more about a hot bath than a dip in a pool, but whatever. Let's get to it. And hi, everybody. Welcome to Poll Hub. I'm J.D. Dapper.
I'm Barbara Carvalho.
And I'm Lee Marengoff. Happy New Year to all of you.
Happy New Year.
Welcome back, everybody. It is officially and has been for a few days now, 2022. But we are recording this episode on January 6th, the one-year anniversary of the Capitol riot. As we all know, we all do see and describe that event very differently. But you know, one thing that Americans do have a consensus about is that there is a problem with democracy. Most Americans, 78%, say democracy is currently under threat, and that's 80% of Democrats, 79% of Republicans, 78% of independents. But the consensus really ends there. We have a new poll with our NPR PBS NewsHour partners. What are some of the things where we disagree very significantly?
Well, I thought in the numbers, I thought it was interesting. We disagree almost about everything else. As to what happened. So we disagree. In the open, Jay talked about lots of different words to describe this. Well, you know, Democrats are likely to have called this an insurrection, maybe even a coup. Republicans are, the plurality, call it a political protest. And even a 35% of Republicans call it an unfortunate event, but there's really no need to worry about it. So that's a very big difference in just in terms of the common language or lack thereof about what occurred. We also, disagree over whether Donald Trump is to blame for what happened. And I think that what I found interesting in this is, although a majority do think that there's culpability for Donald Trump, and again, Democrats overwhelmingly, and Republicans only a few, the numbers have, slightly declined from a year ago, January, in the immediacy of the event, when 63% nationally thought Donald Trump was to blame.
And now it's 53%.
It's now 53. Although I'm not so sure, that may just be with the passage of time. I think there's a lot of attention right now, clearly being devoted to the events of January 6th of last year. And I'm not so sure in the next number set we're going to see a return to the numbers that we saw then. But clearly there's wide disagreement over the old Groucho Marx expression, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? And some people want to believe themselves, and some people are going to want to believe what they were seeing on the tape and the events around that.
I think one of the things that's being remarked about on this day, on this anniversary, and Joe Biden, the president, spoke this morning, there's a lot of commentary, all the TV networks are doing specials. But one of the things that keeps coming up is that in the immediate aftermath on this, so 1 year ago tonight, when famously the Congress came back into session, if you recall, mm-hmm. Despite the fact that hours earlier, shots had been fired, glass had been broken, hundreds of people had rushed the Capitol, people died, that the Republican leaders were pretty unequivocal in decrying the event and
yes.
in decrying Donald Trump's role in it and calling it out, from Kevin McCarthy to Mitch McConnell to many others.
I remember Lindsey Graham in the Well of the Senate, just upsettingly reporting enough's enough, you know.
Enough's enough. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm off the Trump train.
Playing golf with the president the next day or 2 days thereafter. But, you know,
yeah,
the sentiment was there, at least initially.
It took slightly longer, but yeah, not a lot longer. And so I think that commentary that's going on about how remarkably fast these Republican leaders changed and re-embraced to some degree Trump is reflected in these numbers. So when half of Americans, 49%, call it an insurrection, but 25% say it's legitimate political protest, that is a case of, do you believe your eyes or not? I agree with you, Lee. But it's also, who have you been listening to for the last year? And when everybody but a handful of Republicans, Liz Cheney being among the most notable, basically say, don't believe what you saw or what we told you on January 6, 2021, is it a surprise that this fairly significant minority of Americans don't believe what they saw on January 6th, don't believe what Republican leaders told them on January 6th, because they're telling a different story now?
Well, what about the process of the investigation? I mean, it certainly is a bipartisan committee. There are Republicans who are part of that investigation, and certainly Democrats are welcoming any Republican that wants to, you know, get on the record about the events of those days. But we see 62% of Americans think that an investigation into those events a year ago is appropriate, but 35% actually describe it as a witch hunt. And witch hunt, we use those words in the question, because that is the rhetoric that is being discussed. Of course, Democrats overwhelmingly believe that there should be an investigation, but actually 68% of Republicans agree that it is a witch hunt. Is there a future to this investigation, or is this just going to become another just political football as we head into the elections later this year?
Yeah, well, I would say there's a political football element to this, but we're going to see, for example, the Republicans are going to increasingly say that this bipartisanship on the committee to which you referred to were only the Republicans who, you know, are against Trump. Liz Cheney and one other, the Republicans themselves are not taking siding up with this. They're taking that view. I do think we're likely to see some televised hearings, and the Democrats, if they're smart, will claim that this is a Republican's opportunity to let their side out, to have a chance in front of a national audience to make their case if they disagree with what the Democrats are saying. I mean, it's all going to be about framing it. But I think, you know, before we move on to the other topic, I would just put on, I mean, there's a big question on the table here about democracy. And there's a big question about the legitimacy of the Biden administration and what that means. And I think most people who are thinking forward on this are saying, okay, we had an election. The evidence suggests overwhelmingly or unanimously.
It doesn't even suggest. It is evidence, period. Facts. We sometimes forget that.
Yeah, that in fact, Joe Biden won the election. And then there's all kinds of reasons why that is the case. But the fact that so many Republicans don't think that was the case, they think it was stolen, or they think the count was inaccurate, or they whatever, do not see Joe Biden as legitimate president, raises the bigger concern. If you start with an insurrection or whatever you want to call it, or if you want to call it an attempted coup, we're not done with this. This is not ended. I think the New York Times editorial last week, every day is January 6th, is really very, very interesting, because there's been steps taken, which we're going to talk about, I'm sure, during the course of this year, because this is going to stay with us. About, you know, just, you know, where are we going from this? And you know, what does 2022 pretend? And what does 2024 pretend? And that those, I think, are ultimately the questions that we're going to have to come to terms with if this democracy is going to move forward.
One thing I just want to note, that as we record this, the president spoke this morning and spoke in terms that I don't know any modern president has spoken in. not about how robust our democracy is, but how much risk there is that we may not remain a democracy. I don't know if there's more sobering words that can be spoken by a president of the United States, but I also don't know that it's going to resonate with at least, you know, a significant minority of the population who doesn't believe that he's a legitimate president.
Well, his base wants to hear that this is, you know, that he is not going to stand by on this. Although the Civil War wasn't exactly a big party when it came to Abraham Lincoln. However, this is certainly in a long, since then, we've had nothing like this. I think that's fair to say.
Let's talk about something that is directly related to this in some ways, which is the use of Twitter. And President Trump, when he was president, used Twitter in a way that no president ever has, but assuredly some future presidents probably will, very aggressively. And he's been banned from Twitter permanently, or maybe not so permanently, we'll see, as have other kind of political, some political people, but also some people who are not politicians, but have violated the rules of Twitter's engagement. Pew has done a research study, it's not just a poll, about Twitter as Twitter comes up on its 16th birthday in March of this year. And it's really interesting because they didn't just ask Americans, hey, do you use Twitter? What do you use it for? Good questions, interesting stuff. They also looked at this cohort of super users, people who are on it all the time, and they looked and they got access to those people's Twitter accounts. And then they did some research into what those Twitter, what they do on Twitter, what this cohort does on Twitter, and how it influences other people who may pass through Twitter on a more casual basis. So a lot of stuff to dig in here, and you know, I urge you to go in the show notes and look at this Pew research. But one of the things that really stood out to me in this was that there's a small cohort of people. It's one in five. That use Twitter too many times a day to count. And that's not one in five Twitter users. It's actually only 10% of Twitter users. But that about 20% of them are under 30, and that the next largest is liberal Democrats. Is Twitter basically turned into just a liberal or a Democratic platform? I mean, that's one of the things that stuck out at me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, first of all, in the age group, I'm totally, you know, atypical here. I use Twitter a lot. I use it for information, and I use it to communicate with people. So when the numbers talk about to stay informed, for entertainment, which I guess is the, you know, connecting with people, also it lists that, you know, I'm sort of, I use it for the same reasons, but certainly not common to the age group.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that what happens on Twitter gets so incredibly amplified by other media sources. And what I find fascinating is that other social media platforms or other platforms like, you know, YouTube and Facebook and even Instagram, they have a much larger base of people who are using those platforms. But it seems that the most kind of outrageous or kind of eye-catching comments and things end up on Twitter. And you make the point, and I just want to emphasize, Jay, that you were talking about, you know, 25% of, you know, Twitter users. Well, it's 25% of about 23% of Americans, because Twitter's, you know, the people, you know, the number of the proportion of Americans on Twitter is somewhere, you know, between, you know, 1 in 5 and 1 in 4. I mean, it varies depending upon how it is getting measured. But it is such a small proportion of people. And as you point out, that even smaller proportion of people who are on Twitter are actually accounting for about 97% of, you know, everything that's going on Twitter. So it's a very interesting phenomenon. And we often draw a circle around social media, but I'm not so sure that all social media is equal and really having a, you know, a similar impact.
Yeah, one question that I had in looking at this, and we've seen this, Pew's done a lot of research in this, as have others, about the veracity of information in social media. And one of the things that I think they asked here that was interesting is, so you as a Twitter user, do you come across inaccurate or misleading information? And then what do you do with this? And so 91% of the people that they talk to who use Twitter say, yep, they come across misleading and inaccurate information. Not a surprise. I'm surprised actually it's not 100% because it's certainly there. And a third say they come across a lot of it, but there's a partisan split. So 45% of Republicans say they come across a lot of misinformation, but 27% of Democrats say it, which kind of gets me back to, does this show that Twitter does have a partisan split in terms of the audience, or a tilt, not a split, a partisan tilt in terms of the audience? Not that Twitter is doing this on purpose, but has the audience that has moved and gravitated and uses Twitter, which again is not a huge audience, but is it, you know, manifestly more liberal, manifestly younger, manifestly more Democratic? It seems to suggest that.
Well, I think certainly the Pew Research supports those conclusions. I don't know the impact of the Trump ban from Twitter and how that impacted it, because I think if we were to track, and people have tracked discussions on Twitter, particularly during campaigns, that is not the case. In other words, there's a pretty fair balance. And I think as we move to 2018 and 2020, it was more of a balance between Democrats and Republicans. And during the campaign of 2016, it was definitely more Republican, because it was a platform that was initially used by Republicans. So I think it has a lot to do with how Twitter has evolved, particularly in the last eight years. I'm thinking back to, you know, to 2012 and 2014, when it was starting to be used as a platform for campaigns. So perhaps right now, you know, there are mostly liberal young Democrats that are left on the platform, and Republicans have moved to more niche platforms that are more open to some of the things that have now been regulated on the more public and broader platforms.
Which makes all the sense in the world. If you think Donald Trump has been booted off Twitter, Democrats are going to think this is now a more popular vehicle for communication of interesting information. And Republicans are saying it's a lot of hooey at this point because their guy's no longer in it. So they figure it's people aren't evaluating whether things are factual or not, but they're certainly taking their signals from, you know, who's allowed in and who isn't. I think we can agree that it has an outsized influence and has through its life.
Well, it gets incredibly amplified, but we're not done. Twitter is 16, but it's got a lot of up and coming youngsters, biting at its heels.
Two quickies on that before you move, Lee. One is that with Twitter being turning 16, I think this is a table setter for what we're going to see this year, which is legislation, or at least a lot of attempted legislation, to regulate social media in some way, Twitter, Facebook, all of these. So it's an interesting time to be talking about this, because I think that's where the conversation goes. And the other thing about Twitter that is interesting to me is this outside influence. It strikes me it's a lot like cable news. They have tiny audiences. I mean, it's just such small audiences. How few people watch Rachel Maddow or Sean Hannity or any of these people in proportion to the population of the U.S., yet outsize influence. I think it's kind of the same idea, the same thing. Anyway, just two thoughts.
We shall dive into the fun fact and see whether we can sink or swim, as the case may be. And the fun fact this time goes all the way back to 1946, a year none of us remember, I'm happy to say. But a Gallup poll went around and found out whether the answer to the question, do you think all high school students should be required to learn how to swim before they can graduate from high school? The national numbers, 73% said yeah, 24% said no. Now, if the majority had ruled in this case, I would not have made it to college. Let's just put it that way. I am not, my swimming is usually a sprint of under 10 feet from one point of safety to another. That's never been my thing, but you know, so interesting numbers nationally. And as I said, I wouldn't have made it to college on this.
Well, I think it's also interesting because it is something that has really changed over time. If you know, I was over the holidays, you know, watching, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, and I'm always so curious that their gym actually had a pool, but many high schools did have a pool, not necessarily indoor, but they had a pool or a place where students could swim, and it was part of the curriculum. And so it was never part of any, you know, academic curriculum that I participated in. And unfortunately, that's to my disadvantage, because I just sink like a rock. I've never been able to develop the ability to float and move in water.
So do you use lots of protection to keep yourself above level?
Yes, absolutely. Never gave up my water wings.
I just want to frame this differently before we go. Can you imagine 73% right now in the current environment, COVID, 73% of Americans agreeing that high school students should be required to learn anything? I don't know. Maybe I'm cynical.
Well, I think that is a bit cynical. And I suspect I suspect also, though, that the, you know, the kind of, it wasn't a pandemic, but it was certainly a very significant, impactful issue in the 1950s of polio, which was, something that was thought to be spread, you know, through pools, probably had a significant impact on the change of how people viewed that.
But Jay dodged Jay did not weigh in on whether he was a sink or swimmer.
Oh, I learned to swim. We had a pool in our back. I grew up in LA in Southern California. We had a pool in our backyard. I learned to swim before I could walk because there was a pool. I mean, it was a fenced pool, but my mom made sure that I knew how to swim as a baby, my sisters as well, before we even really knew how to walk. So
very impressive.
Yeah. I know how to swim. Yeah.
Good for mom.
Yeah. I don't have life-saving skills and stuff. I'm not like I wasn't a lifeguard or something, but you know, yeah, I swim and I like swimming.
So we know we can add walk and talk. We can add swimming to your repertoire.
I'm a Renaissance man. Absolutely.
No argument from me.
That'll do it for this edition of Poll Hub. Poll Hub is a production of the Marist Poll at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Mary Griffith is our executive producer. Casey Schaff is our production supervisor. And the Poll Hub team includes Ashley Marcinik and Marcello Bettman. And for the first time ever, producing this podcast, Athan Hollis. Good work, Athan. If you enjoy Poll Hub, please consider leaving a review. Positive reviews help other like-minded listeners find us. If you want to learn more about polling and survey science, check out the Marist Poll Academy. It's our free online learning portal. And if you have questions, tweet them right at us, at Marist Poll. Finally, wherever you listen to Poll Hub, there is a subscribe button. Click it, and the latest episode will be ready for you in your podcasting app of choice as soon as it is released. Happy 2022, everybody. We'll see you next time.